The AAT hears the majority of tax disputes, yet many practitioners are less familiar with the rules governing appeals to the tribunal than they are with appeals to the federal court. Today, Sam Ewer will deliver a paper that summarises the main features of an appeal to the tribunal and explains how its procedures differ from those in the federal court. Sam has been at the Victorian Bar for 4 years and he specialises in judicial review and merits review proceedings in the federal court and in the AAT. He has acted for the Australian Taxation Office in objection review proceedings in the AAT. Our panel members this morning are, first of all, Stephen Sharpley. Stephen has been at the Victorian Bar now for 15 years, and his main area of practice is taxation litigation. He's appeared in many complex taxation disputes at the AAT, Federal Court, and the full Federal Court level. Next on the panel is Dr. Julianne Jakes. Julianne is a commercial barrister specialising in tax law. Her practice is a mix of appearance and advice work covering all aspects of taxation. And immediately to my right is Melanie Baker. Melanie also specialises in tax law. Before coming to the bar, she practised as a solicitor in the tax group of Allens Arthur Robinson for 8 years. Melanie also worked in the past for the Australian Taxation Office in Canberra for 2 years, during which time she was the secretary of the ATO's GST rulings panel, as it was then known. So a lot of experience on the panel, and I'd urge you to make the most of it, the opportunity when the panel session begins. But I'd now ask Sam to deliver his paper.
Thank you, Michael. The Minister of Appeals Tribunal is a creature of statute. It doesn't have any inherent jurisdiction. So its jurisdiction comes, like the jurisdiction of VCAT, from the enabling enactments that confer jurisdiction upon it. And the relevant enabling enactment in this case is, of course, the Taxation Administration Act, Part 4C. As we all know, a Part 4C review in the tribunal is a de novo hearing. And this means that the tribunal stands in the shoes of the commissioner and remakes the decision based on the evidence before it. Now, of course, the tribunal can look at new evidence, that is evidence not considered by the objection officer or the audit officer. The tribunal isn't concerned with errors that may have been made in the assessment or the objection, but rather taking a fresh look at the merits of the case. Now, the tribunal isn't formally bound by the rules of evidence, but as we know, it ordinarily has regard to the rules of evidence in conducting proceedings as a way of securing the integrity of its decision making. As Julianne mentioned last week, the rules of evidence have a clear basis in good sense and fairness, and they therefore get used in the tribunal. In Part 4C matters, the taxpayer has the burden of proof. And the burden is to show that the assessment is excessive, or in the case of a decision that's reviewable in the tribunal that isn't an assessment, that the decision shouldn't have been made or should have been made differently. And this means that in respect of assessments, the taxpayer, as I said, doesn't succeed merely by showing that there was some error affecting the commissioner's assessment. They must show what the amount of their liability to tax should be. In the tribunal, the taxpayer is limited to the grounds stated in the objection, but as was discussed in last week's session, in practice it's difficult for the commissioner to object to a motion to add a new ground by a taxpayer. Difficult, I mean, for the commissioner to show prejudice by reason that a ground is to be added. And last week, just to recap briefly, Stephen Sharpley identified three areas where the commissioner can resist, or may be inclined to resist a motion to add new grounds. They were if the ground was without any prospect of success. Second, if the proposed new ground would involve the need to adduce evidence that is ancient history, if you like, stale, or that involves witnesses who are unavailable. And third, if the proposed new ground were that the wrong entity has been assessed a taxation, but that entity, the Commissioner is out of time to amend an assessment of that entity. By Section 43 of the AAT Act, the Tribunal has is entitled or authorised to exercise all of the powers and discretions that were conferred by legislation on the original decision maker, and that includes the Commissioner. And the important effect of this is that the Tribunal is entitled to exercise discretions and to form states of satisfaction that were for the Commissioner to exercise or form when making the decision under review. And this is a slightly different position from that which obtains in tax appeals in the Federal Court, where in order for the Federal Court to substitute its own opinion or state of satisfaction for that of the Commissioner, the Federal Court must first be satisfied that one of the errors mentioned in the Avon Downs case has occurred in the original decision. Unlike the taxpayer who needs an order to add a ground, the Commissioner is entitled to seek to uphold the assessment by raising contentions that weren't raised at the audit or the objection stage. There are two qualifications. The first is two related qualifications. The first is that the Commissioner can't do that if the Commissioner is subject to the requirements of procedural fairness in doing so. An 11th hour decision to rely on a new basis after the close of evidence, for example, may not be allowed. And the second qualification is that, connected to what I've just said about the Tribunal's power to re-exercise discretions and form states of satisfaction, if the taxpayer has made the election to go to the Federal Court and would thereby be precluded from would thereby have been precluded from asking the Federal Court to re-exercise a discretion or form a state of satisfaction by the Avon Downs principle, the court may refuse leave to the Commissioner to rely on a ground that depends upon one of those formations of states of satisfaction or exercises of discretion, because that election, in a sense, has already been made and can't be reversed. Procedure. The Tribunal is authorised under legislation to determine its own procedure at its discretion. But it generally follows a standard formula in tax review cases. The taxpayer has 60 days from the date that he or she is served with the notice of the objection decision to make application to the Tribunal for review, and the form is accessible on the Tribunal's website. The Tribunal has the power to extend that 60-day period, in contrast to the Federal Court, which doesn't have an equivalent power to extend time. Within 28 days of the application, the Commissioner must file with the Tribunal a statement of reasons and a bundle of documents which are known to all as the T documents, or sometimes referred to as the Section 37 documents, which is a reference to a section of the AAT Act. The T documents in a in a Part 4C proceeding must include the notice of decision, the reasons for the decision, that is the first instance decision, the assessment, and the objection and the notice of objection decision, as well as the reasons on the objection. And the documents that the Commissioner is to lodge must be the documents that the Commissioner considers necessary to the review of the objection decision. Additionally, the Tribunal is entitled to require a party to produce a document or a list of documents and has the power to do that either by notice or orally at a conference, including at a conciliation. So a matter for the panel to discuss may be whether a formal request is required to tender the T documents and whether the taxpayer has any right to object to the T documents going into evidence. Before the Tribunal, a party can be can appear in person, of course, or can be represented by a lawyer or by another person, and this includes accountants. Another discussion point for the panel may be whether there are lessons of experience for taxpayers in being represented by accountants before the Tribunal. As a matter of ordinary procedure, a first conference is usually scheduled by the Tribunal within about 8 weeks of the institution of the review proceeding. And the orders are usually that the applicant file a statement of facts and contentions and witness statements, and that the respondent then follow with his statement of facts and contentions and any witness statements. As a matter of practice, it's common for the Commissioner not to file evidence or not to rely on evidence. And there is the power there is the opportunity for either party to make a request for a directions hearing at any time in writing if the need arises. Ordinarily, a conciliation or other form of ADR is usually considered and frequently ordered, and a matter that the panel might wish to consider is the approaches to settlement that might be fruitful when dealing with the Commissioner and the Commissioner's power to compromise or settle proceedings. Ordinarily, the Tribunal orders the parties give hearing certificates indicating availability for hearing and an indication of the likely time that the hearing will take up. And finally, on matters of procedure, the Tribunal must conduct hearings in private if requested by a party. And that means that not only is the hearing room closed, but the Tribunal's reasons, when published, need to be framed so that it's unlikely that the applicant's identity will be revealed. And as discussed last week, confidentiality disappears if the applicant decides to go on appeal, or the respondent decides to go on appeal to the Federal Court from the Tribunal. There is a small taxation claims tribunal that is concerned with claims or disputes rather over an amount of taxation less than $5,000, and there's a modified procedure that applies to that, which can be found on the AAT's website. As I said, in relation to evidence, it's commonplace for the Commissioner not to lead evidence, although the Tribunal, the T documents do very often go in their entirety before the Tribunal, And there's a question which might be addressed as to the evidentiary status that those tribunal documents have. There are also questions that might be addressed by the panel as to the implications of the Commissioner leading no evidence for the conduct of the taxpayer's case. That is, whether the taxpayer can, by leading evidence, shift the burden to the Commissioner and require, in a way that would require the Commissioner to lead evidence. And a peculiar situation arises in tax cases where it's the taxpayer alone who is in a position to give evidence about purpose. The taxpayer's evidence will be, if the taxpayer is an individual, will be relevant. And in a sense, that taxpayer's evidence will be the best evidence in that they're best placed to know their own purpose. But there is authority for that evidence being treated with some caution on the basis that the taxpayer is obviously self-interested. And so a question that the panel may wish to discuss is how comprehensive evidence in support of a review application needs to be, and specifically whether corroborating evidence is required, if you like, and the types of evidence from which a tribunal might infer purpose other than the taxpayer's own viva voce evidence. In the tribunal, evidence in chief, as I've said, is generally by witness statement. This has leads to the obvious question whether a witness statement can be relied on in the tribunal without a witness being made available for cross-examination. And evidence may be given by telephone or by video link, and the panel may have something to say about the usual, about the advocacy considerations that apply to a decision whether to consent or oppose an application for evidence to be given in that way. And the tribunal also has the power to issue summonses for the attendance of persons or for the production of documents or other things to it. This summons power is frequently used by the Commissioner instead of using the Commissioner's so-called access powers when there's a proceeding for review in the tribunal on foot. And there is a question for the panel whether the Commissioner is in fact precluded from using those access powers when a proceeding before the tribunal is on foot. As we know, the institution of a Part 4C proceeding doesn't prevent the Commissioner from recovering tax, and the Commissioner may do so as if no review were on foot. The tribunal is a no-costs jurisdiction. And the tribunal, rather than making orders the way a court would, is required to make a decision in writing. And that's a decision which may set aside the decision under review, vary it, substitute another decision, or remit the decision under review for further consideration. In my experience, the last option hasn't been exercised in any Part 4C case in which I've been involved, and there may be other experiences on the panel. At the end of 28 days, the tribunal's decision becomes final, and at the end of 60 days, the Commissioner must have implemented the decision. Appeals from the tribunal are available under Section 44 of the Administrative Appeals Tribunal Act, and they are appeals of a special variety, that is, appeals on a question of law. Now, that's an appeal in the nature of, that's been described as being in the nature of judicial review, although in reality it is a little different. As with a judicial review proceeding, the Federal Court in a Section 44 appeal from the AAT sits in its original and not its apparent appellate jurisdiction. And the composition of the Federal Court on a Section 44 appeal from the AAT depends upon the way the tribunal was constituted below. So that if the tribunal appealed from was constituted by a judge or by members including a judge, then the appeal is to the full Federal Court. And thereafter, on to the High Court, despite the fact that the full Federal Court in such an appeal would be acting again in original jurisdiction rather than appellate jurisdiction. If the AAT was constituted by a member that wasn't a judge or a presidential member, then appeal is to a single judge of the Federal Court. But if the AAT was constituted by a presidential member, then it could go either way. A request can be made that an appeal be heard before a full bench of the Federal Court, and in those circumstances where the Chief Justice of the Federal Court, after consulting with the President of the AAT, considers it appropriate, a full court can be convened to hear that appeal. The court rules require that a notice of appeal in a Section 44 appeal set out the questions of law or question of law on which the appeal is brought and the grounds of appeal. The implication is that unlike an ordinary judicial review proceeding where the error is inherent in the grounds expressed in the notice of appeal, in a Section 44 appeal, those matters need to be separated out quite carefully. So a question of law needs to be expressed, and it's helpful, if not a requirement, to express the questions of law as questions in the notice of appeal. And questions of law would include things like the tribunal addressed itself to the wrong legal test, the tribunal acted without jurisdiction, the tribunal formed a finding of fact on the basis of no evidence, but not that the tribunal found or made a conclusion of fact on the basis of insufficient evidence, the sufficiency of evidence being a question of fact rather than a question of law. And the other judicial review grounds with which we're familiar, such as taking into account an irrelevant consideration or failing to take into account an irrelevant consideration, are also can also form the basis of questions of law. What cannot be a question of law, but which is seen surprisingly often, are questions like whether the tribunal erred in finding that, insert finding of fact here. Those are, of course, not questions of law, but questions of fact dressed up as questions of law. And strikeout proceedings are pursued in respect of notices of appeal under Section 44. And a strikeout, if made successfully against the taxpayer, is, of course, a serious setback for a taxpayer's appeal. So what are the grounds of appeal then on a Section 44 appeal statement? Well, the grounds are intended to specify the link between the question of law and the circumstances of the case and the orders sought on the appeal. Or put another way, they state how the question of law should be answered and then how, in the circumstances of the case, the tribunal erred in answering the question of law so that the decision appealed from should be set aside. The ordinary orders in a Section 44 appeal are to set aside, if successful, are to set aside the decision made below and to remit the decision in whole or in part to the tribunal for hearing and redetermination according to law. There is a power conferred upon the court in section 44 to substitute its own decision for a decision of the tribunal. And one of them, another matter that the panel might address is the circumstances in which an order by a court substituting a decision will be made. And finally, I flag as another discussion point the availability of other types of judicial review in response to a decision by the tribunal. And that's it for the introductory overview.
Thank you, Sam.